This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave in for Terry Gross. Over his 20-year history with the Boston Philharmonic Orchestra, Benjamin Zander has earned an international reputation as one of the most ambitious conductors in the business, daring to take on the great masters of the classical repertoire. He's known as an expert on the music of Gustav Mahler and has been working with the London Philharmonia since 1995, conducting and recording a series of the composer's symphonies. His new CD with the Philharmonia is a recording of Mahler's Fifth, and it includes an extra disc in which Zander explores the emotional dynamics of Mahler's music and the composer's tragic life. The discussion is drawn from Zander's popular pre-concert talks. Here's an excerpt.
Mahler's orchestra is huge, over 100 musicians, but it is rare for them to play all together, although when they do, you certainly know about it. Listen to this moment at the climax of the first movement, when all the musicians on stage are playing as loud as they possibly can. And in order to be sure he gets the very loudest sound possible, Mahler marks an instruction for each of the wind and brass players to raise the bells of their instruments into the air. It is an overwhelming sound. In an acoustically responsive concert hall, it can have a visceral effect analogous to being hit hard in the solar plexus. At home, it is the ultimate test not only of the range of your hi-fi equipment, but also of the human capacity to tolerate sheer decibels.
Benjamin Zander is the co-author of a new book about music and the psychology of creativity. It's called The Art of Possibility, Transforming Professional and Personal Life. I spoke with Zander last year after the release of his recording of Mahler's Ninth Symphony, which included a copy of Zander's own conducting score. I asked him why he wanted listeners to see his notes.
Well, there are two reasons. One is it's a fascinating way of entering a score, because otherwise how would an ordinary person be able to look at a score unless somebody were to guide them through it by pointing out everything that a conductor would need to know? There's another reason, which is that if you focus for a moment on every element in the music and realize that every note and every gesture and every shape and every phrasing means something in the whole, that gives you an insight how to listen. And that's my main purpose. I believe that every human being has the capacity to respond to great music and to be touched and moved by it and to have their lives changed by it. And so this is the best way of drawing people in. Namely to say, listen to this note, and then listen to that, and then now listen to this, and see what this is doing while that's happening, and think about the meaning and the implication of that. And gradually people get drawn in, and people have told me, people who've never had any training in music whatsoever, have told me they've been riveted by that experience, and they've used it as a way of getting inside the music and listening to the rest of the piece, since obviously I only do that for two pages, to listen to the rest of the piece with their eyes and ears wide open.
Do you think that it's similar to what people say about poetry, that as children we have this innate ability to interact, to experience the music, to feel it, and that we, yes, we lose that as we get older, unless you nourish it?
We lose it the way we lose all sorts of things in life. You know, you were a seven-year-old child and you were singing in a choir and the teacher said, don't actually sing, I'd prefer it if you would just mouth the words because you're spoiling the sound of the choir. And that child grows up to be somebody who later on says, I'm tone deaf and can't hear music. And that's all it is. It's somebody simply closing down a door which used to be open. I feel my role is partly to open those doors again, to remind people of the power of this music and how deeply affecting it can be, even if you have no academic training in it or don't even really know the difference between, you know, a dominant seventh and a minor third. But somehow this music is, we are permeable to this music if we allow ourselves to be, and we close down all the conversations which tell us that we can't do it.
You have an interesting professional history with this this music, with Mahler and Mahler's Ninth. I think over 20 years ago you were fired as the conductor of the Boston Civic Symphony by its board because you presented this symphony. You presented such difficult music. What so provoked them? What did they not like about it?
Well, I'd done a lot of, as they called it, mela. They didn't like the music. It was too difficult. You know, this was an orchestra that wanted to be entertained. One of the board members asked me why I didn't perform any of the Chopin symphonies. Well, of course, I said I had no time to write any. But this was not a group of people who wanted to be challenged to the ultimate. And so they saw this as a kind of confrontation. They fired me because they felt that the orchestra was going in the wrong direction. And what happened next was that the entire orchestra resigned, all 98 players. And I think the reason for that was because the players themselves saw this as a wonderful path to be going on, to be delving deep into this music. We had a long period of rehearsal time because it was a community orchestra. And so I believe we had 22 rehearsals for that performance over a three-month period. And it really transformed the lives of the people who participated. And they weren't about to give that up. So they went on with what is now the Boston Philharmonic.
Now, we've been talking about how difficult and complex this music is. And you do say in the discussion of Mahler's Ninth that especially in this third movement of it, that you wonder why the first-time listener would want to listen. They might ask themselves, why should I listen to this? It's so bleak. It's so hard to follow. And then you know someone who always leaves it out when he listens
right.
to this symphony.
Well, it's the old recordings, you know, on the LPs, it was on four sides. And so he could conveniently go from the end of the first movement to the last movement, which is gorgeous and beautiful and very, very satisfying and to listen to. And he left out those middle two movements. And what I believe, of course, is that we have to go through the struggle of the middle movements to the dark night of the soul in order to appreciate coming out the other side, so that when we finally get to the pages at the end of the Ninth Symphony where he expresses his own mortality, his own death, we have been on a long, arduous struggle and come out the other side. If you have avoided the struggle, obviously you don't appreciate and don't experience the whole thing. That's the flaw with the approach to music, which we see so much nowadays, of taking little bits, the sort of the best moments of an opera or the best moments of a symphony, and pretending that that is the work.
Let's listen then to the third movement of Mahler's Ninth. And Ben, would you like to say anything before we listen
well,
to music?
Well, the thing about this movement is that it's enormously complex. This is about as complex as music can get in terms of polyphony, of the voices that are piled one on top of the other. In this, he's like Bach, and in fact, he was influenced by Bach. The tempo which I chose for this performance is a little bit slower than it's often heard, and the reason for that is in order to make sure that every single voice is clearly heard, so that the complexity of the language of every single moment is experienced. And when in the end it goes over the edge, it really goes into madness, into a complete hysteria at the end in the final section, that is then a feeling of going over a precipice, of having experienced everything and gone over the edge. Of course, the consolation of the final movement has to be experienced too in order to get the full weight of that. But it is a chilling, grim, forbidding experience, although so masterful in its expression and its technique that it blows one's mind.
Let's listen. This is the third movement of Mahler's Ninth. That's my guest, Benjamin Zander, leading the Philharmonia Orchestra of London in a live performance of Mahler's Ninth. Now, I want Ben to play a little bit of the fourth, the final movement of this symphony, because as you said earlier, you want to get to the resolution of
the consolation.
The consolation of the final movement. And the beginning, I find myself listening to this, holding my breath, waiting to exhale. Is that what you're consciously leading your orchestra to create that effect?
Definitely. I'm thrilled that you have that feeling. And actually, at the end of that movement, there's a 56-second silence before anybody dared to applaud after the performance. And that's the same thing you're talking about. Mahler has the capacity of holding us in thrall, where the lines are so long, where the tension is so great, that he simply doesn't allow us to breathe. And if we allow the music to unfold in that way, we can hold 2,000 people in a hall in that kind of spell. And it's one of the few things that can do that.
Let's listen to the fourth movement, the beginning of the fourth movement of Mahler's Ninth. That's my guest, Benjamin Zander, leading the Philharmonia Orchestra of London in a live performance of Mahler's Ninth. For this music, do you make a conscious effort to develop the individuality of your musicians rather than trying to homogenize the sound of the orchestra?
Yes, that gets at the absolute central idea of Mahler's music. In most music, we're taught to make all the voices amalgamate, as you say, homogenize. That's a perfect way of describing it, where everything is related and listening carefully to everything else, and it all sounds very pretty. The secret of Mahler's music is that every single individual voice is separate from every other, and that makes it profoundly modern. Each voice, each instrument seems to have a life of its own. And sometimes he calls on an instrument to play very softly, and at the same time another instrument might be playing very loud and raucously. And it's actually quite a discipline to get an orchestra to realize that and not make the quiet person play a little louder and the loud person a little softer to make it all belong together. And that is at the absolute core of his expression, and I think tells us something about who we are as people, and is a unique voice for Mahler.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Benjamin Zander. He is the conductor of the Boston Philharmonic. He teaches at the New England Conservatory and conducts their Youth Philharmonic Orchestra. He's also served as guest conductor for numerous other orchestras in this country and abroad. Ben, let's take a break, and then we'll talk some more. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Boston Philharmonic conductor Benjamin Zander. Now, how do you decide as a conductor where to take liberties with a piece and to depart from the notations of a composer and when to adhere to them as faithfully as you can?
Well, in general, I'm one who believes in adhering faithfully to what the composer wrote. And I will actually go to quite extremes to do that. I really believe these composers were taking us into often counterintuitive places, places where we wouldn't go just on our own naturally by following our instincts. And so I think it behooves us to follow exactly what they had in mind. And the Beethoven performances are based not only on following every dynamic marking and every phrasing, but also the tempi that he left through the metronome marks. And that makes them very unusual because most people have disregarded those tempo marks and say they're unreasonable or they're too fast or they don't work or whatever. I have taken him at his word, always asking the question, could he have meant it? Could he have meant it? So in general, I would say we follow religiously what the composer has given us. In some cases, I find myself changing what's there. And there would always have to be a very special reason why that I would do that.
Can you give us an example of when you would take a different path?
Well, I might take a different path if I simply cannot understand what the composer meant. The first movement of the Prokofiev Fifth Symphony is at a tempo so slow that I cannot make it work at that tempo. Now, there's something, either I'm wrong about it or he simply wrote the wrong tempo. I think it's perfectly possible that either is true. That would be one example. There's a fascinating example in Stravinsky of The Rite of Spring, where what the composer wrote and what I believe he intended was something different. That happened because we have a piano roll of Stravinsky, not actually playing, but a piano roll he supervised of the final section, the Danse Sacrale, where the piano roll is 30 points faster on the metronome than his own performances and what he wrote in the score. And it's possible that the faster tempo, thrilling and exciting as it is, was simply too hard to play or too hard to conduct, and so he reduced the tempo so that it would be more comfortable. I think in the process, he lost some of the power and the incredible excitement of hearing this at a breakneck speed. This is, after all, suggesting a young virgin dancing herself to death. And at the slower tempo, I suspect she would hardly break a sweat. At the faster tempo, you can really feel the frenzy and the desperation and the terror. And I think it makes a much more effective interpretation, though Stravinsky himself neither did it nor wrote it.
Now, I know you brought two examples of the Rite of Spring with you so that we could hear this.
Yes.
Maybe we could play them.
Good. Well, you can hear, first of all, there's a performance of Stravinsky playing, say, the last minute of the Danse Sacrale at the tempo that he chose both to mark in the score and to perform it at. And then immediately afterwards, we could play the same passage played by the Boston Philharmonic at the tempo of the piano roll.
And now the Boston Philharmonic's recording from a live performance of the last minute of the Danse Sacrale.
Thank you.
That's the Boston Philharmonic playing Stravinsky's Danse Chorale from The Rite of Spring. Benjamin Zander is the co-author of a new book, The Art of Possibility. His new CD is Mahler Symphony No. 5, Benjamin Zander conducting the Philharmonia Orchestra. I'm Barbara Bogave, and this is Fresh Air.